In a world where the internet is filled with trash-talking 12-year-olds, one website stands out as a safe haven of decent human behavior. Co-Optimus.
Oh yeah!
Co-Optimus, your prime source for co-op gaming.
Hello, and welcome back to the first Co-op the Cast of 2015. It's the future, everybody. It's Monday, January the 5th. I'm here with Mike, I'm here with Locke, and I'm here with Jason. How are you gentlemen doing this evening?
Wonderful. Ready to party like it's 2015.
Yeah, so we've got an exciting show because we're going to do something live on the air later. We're going to see if 50 Cent Blood on the Sand still works on Xbox 360. How's that for the future for you?
That's right. A game that's 4 years old?
We heard a dirty rumor that the servers were down, so we need to verify that once Locke's Xbox 360 is done updating.
Yeah,
it's funny you say it, because I actually, over Christmas break, I had an issue. I was at a party, and we were like, we need to play some NBA Jam.
Yep.
I was like, well, I have it. So I ran home, I fired up my Xbox 360, and I sat through a whole bunch of like updates and stuff to get it. Redownloaded the thing, copied it to the USB stick, came over to my buddy's house, and we go to play it, and then it's like, it made me buy it again.
What?
And I didn't realize it made me buy it again. Like, I thought it was just unlocking, and so I got charged, and I've actually been going back and forth with Microsoft support now for like a week and a half to get my $15 back.
Wow.
That's hilarious.
The future of digital distribution right there.
I think I have NBA Jam, that version, from PS Plus for some reason.
Yeah.
But anyways, New Year's, guys. What'd you get?
Yeah.
What'd you get up to?
What did we get up to? We played a lot of Cards Against Humanity on New Year's.
Yeah.
It was... My jaw hurt from laughing. I forgot how much I loved that
now,
game.
Now, when you play that game, what crowd do you play with? Or was it, like, various?
This was a pretty raucous crowd,
yeah.
As you can say.
See, because I played with Mike.
It was kind of funny because there was my buddy was there and his sister was there. And his sister was kind of like she lets off the innocent kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But to see the transgressions between the two of them, when somebody would say something and, you know, you'd be like, Natalie, oh my God.
That's awesome.
Didn't need to hear you say that. So that's kind of funny. I want to play. My grandma-in-law, I guess you can say, like, I would love to play it with her because I could totally see her enjoying the game and just being ridiculous.
Yeah,
it would be hilarious.
We busted that out quite a bit, and all my mother-in-law gets into it, my wife's extended family, and yeah, it's pretty funny to see what people can come up with. And it's weird too because, like, people find way different things funny, which I love. And, you know, some people really like the crude stuff. Some people really just like smart, like, oh, that's a really smart answer. And it's really cool. So,
yeah, I think there's certain ones where you can tell, like, the cards were made for each other. Mm-hmm. Like, they were the blanks that they pulled out and stuff. Like, we had that happen a couple times where, like, it doesn't get any more perfect than that. Like, the one that, and I can't remember the exact wording was, but it's like, it's the one about the sad hand job.
Yeah.
And it was something like, I'm gonna ruin it. I took a picture of it. I'll dig out the picture.
Okay,
because
sweet.
Do you guys do that? You take the pictures of the absolutely
yeah,
like,
the
perfect,
best ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to think. I know, Mike, you mentioned you had like the best custom card. Do you remember what that was? We were talking about that like a month ago.
Oh, jeez.
I'm sure. I don't know. Was it Clifford the Big Red's dog, Big Red Boner?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I have a friend who plays that game, and he had the blank plus blank equals blank, and it was the unprotected sex plus the heart of a child equals teenage pregnancy.
Yeah.
And that was, like, that is...
That's a mic dropper, yeah.
That's terrible.
Oh yeah, here's the one I have. I took a picture of it. It's edible underpant or I'll do the black card first. Says blank would be woefully incomplete without blank. And the two that got played was edible underpants, edible underpants, and a bleached asshole.
Oh, beautiful.
And it was just.
That's.
Oh, boy.
I think we're gonna need the explicit tag on this episode.
Yeah, this 2015 podcast got off to an interesting start.
2015, I resolved to make this podcast real as real.
We should just one podcast. We should just play just Cards play. Against Humanity on the
just
air.
Just play.
It would be great.
Yeah, I was.
Let's talk about
games.
I was
away in the mountains, so I had limited access to stuff. I was actually on my laptop, so I kind of grabbed a couple different games that I thought would run. And it's like a medium, you know, mid-sized laptop. It's nothing crazy. It's not a gaming laptop, but it can, like, you can run my, you know, Adobe software if I need to use it in a pinch. And something that we sort of touched upon right before all the holidays happened was Dungeon of the Endless. And Nick, you and I remember, you're like, oh man, I've totally forgot about that game. And I did too, until I started exploring. I kind of fell into the hole of the developers who's Amplitude Studios. So I was like exploring their pedigree and their catalog. And I was like, oh, Dungeon of the Endless. I forgot I had that. And it was, you know, one of the things that studio not suffers from. And I think it's definitely it's a positive for them. But their games are on early access from day one development because they get everyone to vote on stuff. And that's how they build it. Which is, you know, of course, it falls into the trap of forgetting about Dungeon of the Endless. But we managed to play it. We played some co-op. We streamed it. But then that was my go-to game all holidays. I was, like, coming up with different strategies and doing different builds of different characters. And it's, like, it might be my favorite roguelike now. It's insane. And it's got a cool balance of RPG stuff and towered event stuff. But different every time, and it's wicked, and the co-op is actually super interesting because things can get pretty complicated.
Yeah, I had an awesome co-op session of that with Taylor Enoch and his friend. We played for about 2 hours, and it was just real chill, like a lot of, you know, talking about strategy, you know, at a nice steady pace, and it was. You know, we posted a review, but I said it really felt like a co-op board game night kind of a thing going on. It is basically what it turned into. So I see you've been playing. Obviously, been playing that, and then there's another endless
game you've been playing. So I decided to. This all goes back to sort of the Steam sale. I didn't buy much on the Steam sale, but I did pick up, that's a surprising thing for me. Like I buy everything, but I picked up Endless Legend. And because I don't know, I've really liked Endless Space. Dungeon of the Endless really surprised me, and I was like, I'm gonna give these guys the benefit of the doubt. Here's my money, and I think it was only like $20 or something, and you can upgrade to their super pack, which gives you. It's actually pretty cool. It gives you. No, I think I bought it because I wanted the hero for Dungeon of the Endless. Because when you buy their gold packs, they give you stuff for their other games, which is kind of neat. So I got an extra hero in Dungeon of the Endless to play with, and then I got a new faction in Endless Space. But I played Endless Legend for, like, I don't know, like 30 hours in the last week and a half, 2 weeks. So it is a 4X game, and the closest thing I can liken it to is Fallen Enchantress. And if you guys remember Fallen Enchantress, it had that rocky, shaky start. Or not start, the whole thing was kind of a debacle, and they sort of salvaged it. But this is that game. This is Endless Legend is the game that Fallen Enchantress tried to be. So it's you know, everyone's gonna want to compare it to like Civilization Beyond Earth and Civ 5 and that sort of thing. And you can in some respects compare it to that because it is a 4X game, but it has its own system. And it's on a totally different level. And once you sort of learn their system, which is, they pulled it from Endless Space, it's called the FIDSI system. It's food, industry, dust, science, and influence. Once you know that, it's like you're in their sort of little microcosm, and it's cool. So one of the, I actually did an hour-long video cast yesterday of Endless Legend, kind of going over a top view of it. But one of the main things I'll pull from it is that the terrain, it's a hex-based terrain, and you know, we all love hexes, from Settlers of Catan all the way to Civ 5, but the topography actually comes into play, not only while you're moving around the map, like you can't go over cliffs and that sort of thing, and it also comes into play in battles, which I think is a really cool thing, and I haven't seen that in a 4X game before, so it's really exciting to see when your armies face off against each other, you can kind of plan where you want to go, and it really emphasizes strategy and tactics in the battles, which I haven't seen in a ton of 4X games, so one of that, and it's just, it's a super solid game, I'm super digging it, and if you like Heroes of Might and Magic, Mass of Orion, if you're disappointed with Civilization Beyond Earth, like, go to this game, because it's going to fly under everyone's radar, and it's super, super good. Like, it's awesome.
Now, is that out of early access?
It's fully released, okay. And it was really cool. I went back on their dev blog, and they actually have they had a contest with, like, almost 100 submissions for a race, a faction designed by someone in the community, and then they took that faction, it was the final faction in the game, and what's nice about it, too, is that they all play so differently. Like, one faction is really invested in science. One faction is really invested in, producing food and more people. There's one that can control the market completely and do that. And I think that's really neat to sort of give you those opportunities instead of just everyone as a blank slate. So I like doing that. So Endless Legend is I'm so impressed with it. I can't get enough of it. And it's unreal. It's such a good game.
Cool. How about Jason? Jason, what have you been playing?
A lot of oldies but goodies. Played actually a lot of Sentinels of the Multiverse, the card game, over holiday break. And
well done.
Yeah, that got me back into it. So, like, while I was there...
The Steam version or the physical
version? The physical version, yeah. They released it on Steam, and I am... Basically, I'm just waiting for them to add online to it. Once they add online, I'm going to pick that up and play it all the time because the local co-op is great for that. But, I mean, for something like that, if you're on a digital platform, I mean, it's really, like, you got to have the online co-op to be able to pick up with
actually
friends
play
and stuff.
It, yeah.
I mean, so got into that, bought a bunch of the expansions and other stuff while I was playing it, because I was just like, I need to play more of this game. Been playing some Lord of the Rings card game. Nancy and I took on the Hobbit Saga this past weekend.
Of course you did. That's a euphemism, isn't it?
It is. It is.
So, tell me how the scouring of the Shire went, Jason.
The mountain...
It's not the size of the Hobbit that counts.
The mountain trolls were too much for us.
Does the road go ever on and on?
Yeah.
Down to the door where it began?
Second breakfast has a totally different meaning, so...
Yep.
Oh.
Yep.
Elevensies.
What was that about a Bruce Castle?
Oh, so good.
So... It was good, but it was tough. It was like the first set of quests that we've done outside of the core set, and like some of the first ones that they released along with that. And it was really tough. We didn't even like beat the first group of three, basically. Like, we didn't even clear the first one of those. So I was back to the drawing board, making up some new decks and stuff like that this past weekend. We'll test them out again some other time. Our goal was to try and get through all the Hobbit stuff as we were watching the movies.
Nice.
And seeing which one would finish first, the movies or the game. And the movies won out, but that was just due to us failing. And then, on the other front, just been playing more Destiny, soloing parts of Crota's End, because you can do that now. And
is that part of the DLC? Is that a thing?
That's raid.
It's pretty great. And then some Persona Q and Dungeon of the Endless.
Cool. Mike, what about you? You acquired a new piece of hardware this holiday season.
I got an Xbox One because the deals on it were just ridiculous over the holiday. So I paid under $400 for it, and I got 4 games and a year of Xbox Live.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's super good.
So on top of that, I also got Master Chief and so I got Master Chief, Sunset Overdrive, and Destiny. So I have Destiny on both platforms now.
Good, good, a good game to have.
And so I've been playing a lot of that, and just getting coming to grips with the awful user experience of its dashboard is kind of crazy, so because bad. The 360 was pretty easy to use, and the Xbox One splits every like different type of setting out into a separate application, and it counts as an application. And once you've backed out of all your applications, if you press the B button on the controller, which is kind of the back, it says, oh, you want to go back to the application you just closed. So there's a number of times when I've quit out of a game and then navigated over to a menu and then pressed the B button, and then it's like, oh, you want to play that game again? It launches the game. I'm like, what the fuck is this? but yeah, it's pretty cool. Because of the news story we're going to talk about in a while, I actually found out that Xbox Live's network engineers are still way better than PSN's. Xbox Live went back up after probably about 18 hours for me, and then never went down again. And I couldn't even use my place, like, I couldn't even play Destiny for 5 days on the PS4. So, you know, it's, interesting. But, yeah, that's, you know, I think out of the crop of games I got, I'd say Sunset Overdrive is the most interesting. Master Chief Collection's pretty cool. I played all the way through Halo 1. I started Halo 2, and those cutscenes are amazing that they added. Like, it's just like, I just want to watch all these. I don't really care about playing Halo 2 again. And I actually haven't yet checked out the Halo 5 beta, but I don't know if I have time to.
Oh, I did play a bit of that, actually.
I didn't actually play that many video games over the break, though, because I was watching college football. Because, you know, there's like 40 bowl games or whatever, you gotta watch them all. And it's the best postseason in sports, man. And then I got to see my Ducks run hog wild over Florida State, and that made me very happy. So, it's good times. That's cool. Really it. We'll cover everything else I played.
Yeah. I did play a little bit of the Halo 5 beta, and it's interesting kind of what they're doing with it. They're kind of speeding it up a bit, adding some more mobility to it, which you could see they're kind of catering a little bit to the Call of Duty crowd.
Well, they added aim down sights, didn't they?
Yeah, well, they added, I mean, the thing is, it's always had kind of aim down sights, with there's a lot of the guns did, right? The battle rifle, the DMR, mm-hmm. The pistol. You know, but they added it to the assault rifle, which is the big deal. But it doesn't, while you can do it, it doesn't give you any actual benefit. It's just for, I don't know, usability kind of a thing. But if you aim down the sights, or if you don't aim down the sights, as long as the cursor essentially is over the guy, it's going to hit regardless, mm-hmm. kind of a thing. But it's very interesting to see how much the multiplayer feels a bit like Destiny. In fact, like, you almost wonder if they were developing those multiplayer ideas at one point together, and then, you know, when they split out and 343 went one way and Bungie went another, kind of what they decided. Like, for instance, when the matches start, you see your team kind of come up all bro-like and stand there and like, this is the blue team, you know, and you see all that, and there's some stuff with the announcers and things like that that kind of remind me. The one really cool thing that they added to the multiplayer is there's a lot of ambient voice chatter between the characters in the game, so you don't necessarily need voice communication for certain things. Like, it'll tell you where there's guys spotted, or if you picked up ammo, or if you're reloading, or there's a lot of chatter from the guys in it. So that was kind of interesting. It actually reminded me a bit of Shadowrun, the oh, FPS. Yeah, yeah. And how, like, there was a lot of chatter in that. Though that was user-initiated, this is automatic.
That's cool.
So, anyway, it seems pretty cool. I think that runs for another, like, week or two yet. And they keep adding more maps and modes to check out, so... But other than that, I've been playing a bit of Far Cry 4 on the PC. Working through that, and the game is a ton of fun. It's good just to kind of goof around and see some fun things
happen. Hang out with Logan Decker?
Finally started playing Shadow of Mordor, which is
good man.
Pretty good,
good game.
Yeah, pretty good stuff. Yeah. And I picked up a bunch of, you know, I picked up a lot of small games on the Steam sale. A lot of shoot 'em ups. But the one game I caught towards the end was this game called Ultimate General Gettysburg, which is a top-down real-time RTS. If you ever played Sid Meier's Gettysburg back in the day, it's like a spiritual successor. It's a lot of fun. There's some good strategy involved with it. Lots of good sound and historical stuff. And yeah, so it's pretty cool. Worth checking out. I think it was like $6 on sale or $7. And then Dungeons and Daedalus, playing that every now and then. I got so close to finally beating the thing or completing a run.
Nice.
On too easy, but
it's the way to do it. Too easy is the way to do it. Yeah, unlock all your dudes.
I did. Yeah, I think I have two more guys to unlock now. So
I actually escaped the Steam sale without spending a dime.
Well,
you also bought an Xbox
on a new console. Yeah,
it's true. But I was looking at the Steam sale every day, and I didn't pull the trigger on anything.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good feat.
Yeah. All right, let's jump into some news. There's just a few things we want to chat about before talking Game of the Year. And the story that Mike alluded to earlier was about hackers.
Fucking hackers.
And
but they're not hackers. They're hackers. DDoS.
Jason,
it's not hacking.
Tell us about Lizard Squad.
Aren't they the guys who directed that Super Troopers movie?
That's Broken Lizard.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay.
Right.
What's the name of that restaurant that you really like again?
You mean Shenanigans?
Oh! Alright.
Some shenanies?
Shenanies. So, some group of people calling themselves Lizard Squad brought down Xbox Live and PlayStation Network with distributed denial of service attacks or DDoS attacks.
We did it, guys!
These are, in the world of things, too, they're like the most basic of attacks, and... there's some article I was reading somewhere in the aftermath of all this where it's just like, yeah, neither network really could have done much against it since they're just blunt force. Like, you don't build networks to necessarily that can defend against something like that. It's just a massive barrage, and you're just like, all right, well, just how long until we get back up again? So,
well, that's true and not true. Like, I work for an ISP, and we actually sell a service, or we partner with a company that sells a device that's specifically designed to ditch garbage traffic. You purchase it in gigabytes of traffic at a time that it can handle, and it's designed to be like anti-DDoS. But like, I think the minimum size you can get, like we basically buy the device and then sell it out piecemeal. I think 10 gig might be the smallest amount, and you're talking like $500,000 a box or something like that. It's expensive to do, but I mean, these are big online services. So I imagine they probably have something like that in place.
Sure.
It's just
like, you know, if you get hammered that much, it's going to come down at some point.
Oh yeah, and the way a DDoS works is that it's twofold. You're trying to overwhelm the capacity, but you're also trying to overwhelm it with so many requests that even load balancing techniques can't work fast enough.
To compensate for it all, yeah. So it happened, it was done, and the thing that was just shitty about it all was that they did it on Christmas Day. So when everybody is getting new games, when people are getting new systems, getting excited to go and check all this stuff out, and they can't get on because people have done this. And I mean, there's no, the thing about it is like, from my standpoint, I don't see any purpose. Like, there's no real message here. It's just, we did it, and it's
we
like...
We kill it, guys!
Actually, as a follow-up, they did it to prove that they had the capacity to take down large networks and then began selling DDoS services.
Nice.
So they...
And then, in the hindsight of that, too, Anonymous went out and was like, all right, well, here's the people who are doing all this. Go ahead and have fun tracking them down. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I had shared that with you. They were tweeting out their pictures and addresses and stuff.
Yeah.
That was happening.
So
this is how we lose net neutrality, people.
This is how we lose a lot of things. This is why we can't have nice things,
yeah.
People.
Stop it, you jerks.
Between this shit and Gamergate, you know, everyone who wants the free and open internet sure isn't doing a good job at giving us reasons to have
nope.
it.
Yeah.
No internet for you 1 year.
So moving on, another thing. I think we actually talked about this in the last podcast about games coming out broken, and Halo Master Chief Collection had some issues.
Couple.
And Microsoft was sorry, and so... they're doing some interesting things.
So, yeah. Master Chief Collection is... let's say it's unstable. You know, I didn't get... like, I bought my Xbox One after a bunch of the big patches that already come in. And the game is about 50-50 at locking up completely upon launching. Just, like, pressing start to get into it. It just sits there and hitches. And... eventually catches up, and then you can do everything. And the multiplayer was just all kinds of broken. You know, you'd be sitting there to do, like, I want to play some casual multiplayer, and it signs you into a ranked session, or you say, I want to do some multiplayer, and it makes you start a Forge session instead. You know, it's just very,
weird.
Very broken. So 343 has been issuing patches pretty frequently since the game came out, and as a token of their appreciation for everybody who weathered the storm with them and tried to play the game online, they're giving players a 1 month of Xbox Live Gold and some in-game nameplate and avatar, which is whatever. It's like, hey, look, you guys fucked up. Let me advertise it. So I don't know. It seems kind of like like a month of Xbox Live Gold is nice, because that saves you a couple bucks in the end.
Yeah.
But more relevant to my interests, at least, they announced that they are indeed bringing ODST to the Master Chief Collection sometime this spring, I believe.
Yeah.
And so anybody who played Master Chief... so the first set of rewards goes to anybody who tried to play online, at least from their wording. But ODST is going to be free to anybody who played the game at all from launch day through the 19th of December. So that'll be pretty awesome, because ODST is the secret best Halo game.
Yes.
It's not.
But there is a downside.
Yes, there is a big downside to it that makes it not the secret best Halo game. Is that they are not bringing Firefight to the Master Chief Collection.
Boo.
And to that I say, fuck you. Because Firefight.
This is definitely the most explicit podcast.
Firefight is probably my favorite Horde mode style game mode ever. I've never played one that was more fun, and that was a big part of why I have like 100 hours played in ODST, which was like 5 hours long on the campaign. And they announced that, and immediately I was like, yes, Firefight. And they're like, no, bro, we're going to keep all the competitive multiplayer. That's cool.
That's cool, broski.
That's cool. And that makes me sad, because... if you're going to bring the game over, bring everything. Like, you brought over everything from all the other games. But Halo ODST, no, it's a second-class citizen. You don't get to have everything. It's like, I just don't understand it. I really don't understand a lot of the ways they've treated this Master Chief Collection. It seems like it was not supposed to actually come out last year.
Well,
but it did, because Halo 5 missed that year.
Yeah, they needed a Halo game.
Because it, like, so many of the things in it are half-baked or cause crashes that I just, it's...
It's such an ambitious kind of a thing, too.
Yeah.
It's
like, what, did to, you not...
It seems like it needed some thorough testing that it never got.
Yeah, I don't know. It just, I really enjoy playing it, and I think what they did with Halo 2 is great, and I'm looking through it. I was actually hoping to finally finish Halo 4 through this, because I hadn't done that yet. I got about halfway through and then stopped for some reason. So, anyway, ODST's coming. The audio logs are in it are pretty rad. I wonder if they'll have. I wonder if they'll keep the Destiny teaser that was in it originally. Anyway, yeah. So, happy, not happy.
Yeah, so another bit of news on a game that kind of got a fresh coat of paint, we'll say, is GTA 5, which I wrote a review update for. Just kind of wanted to mention a few things about that. I hadn't played it. I hadn't played the original, but I think every week, Locke, you played it, and Mike, you played
it. I reviewed it,
too, right? Yeah. The 360 version?
I played it on the PS3. It was broken at launch.
It's a busted-ass game.
Yeah. It's interesting. So, GTA Online now is pretty crazy full-featured. Like, there is a ton of content. In terms of co-op missions, I want to say, I think there's 36 missions to play in co-op. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a ton. Like an absolute. Like, they've done a really bad job of communicating what some of this stuff is.
Are they actual missions or are they just activities?
Oh yeah. No, they're missions.
More like snack activities, Mike. So.
Basically, what happened? You first of all, you can't get them until you're like level 8, and then you. And I'm not even sure how you find the guy, but there's a guy there that basically is the mission giver. But once you find him, then he's on your cell phone, and you can bring him up and basically matchmake into.
Yeah,
mission type stuff.
Are they? But are they like story based or what? That.
Yeah, like they have stories about them, and you know, like the one I played was you had to break up a drug bust for this one guy, take the drugs, and then bring it back to his house. And then when he actually got back to his house, then another piece of the story kind of happened. Like, it's not integrated into the main story of the game; they're their own little isolated things. But they do have kind of like a setup, and then. You know, some stuff they're going to go through.
Because when I played it, you'd say, "I would like to do this activity. I want to be on an airplane and chase guys on motorcycles." And then you would try and matchmake into it, and it would take 15 minutes, and then dump you back out and say, "I couldn't find anybody." Or it would matchmake you in while it was in progress, but it wouldn't jump you where everyone was. It would put you at the start point, which is a 10-minute real-time drive away from where they are at that point. And it was just terrible. I hated it.
Yeah, so I don't know if they had this too in originally, but what it does now is when you matchmake into stuff like that, you know, you still do that. You still kind of pick. But once you get in that group, as soon as the activity ends, it brings up like a voting thing. And then everybody can vote on what to do next. And it kind of makes you a party. And you can essentially jump from thing to thing. So it's nice for the co-op stuff because once you get into a co-op mission with a couple people, which is what happened for me, then it brings up and then there's a couple choices for co-op missions, or you could switch back to like the versus stuff. But we jumped through like I think 4 or 5 co-op missions together and checked that out. But then the big update, which is coming within a couple of weeks, is the actual heist. And for the heist, you're going to need to be level 12. And that's actually like multi-stage tiered co-op kind of a thing. Like you have to gather the materials and do the planning and all that other kind of stuff to do the bank robberies and whatever else you're going to rob.
I'll believe that when I see it.
So it'll be interesting to see how they pull it off. I mean, they've been saying the heists were coming forever now, and now
it was supposed to come originally. It was supposed to come out before they announced that they were making new gen versions of the games.
Yeah, it's been a while. But, I mean, overall, I was pretty impressed with it. The game itself, like the GTA game, is pretty fun. The characters are interesting. You know, I think having 3-character dynamic in it keeps it a little fresher than the previous ones. And then as they cross paths and stuff, it's kind of cool. So
They still dropped the ball with Trevor, though.
Yeah.
His character starts amazingly funny and then just becomes really inappropriately dark.
Gotcha. So last little bit of news, or something I thought worth talking about, is Locke did a pretty sweet preview for a game called Clandestine.
Yeah, he did.
Why don't you tell us about that?
Clandestine is pretty interesting. It's a asymmetrical co-op game for two people. And this is coming from Logic Artists. So those guys made... The last game they made was a little title called Expeditions Conquistador, which was a turn-based sort of strategy RPG game. And awesome. But so they decided to do something similar. No, I'm just kidding. Clandestine is like a 90s inspired spy hacking thriller. And it's unique because one player is playing, obviously, as the spy. One player is as the hacker. And they're very different. The spy plays like a third person shooter, third person stealth games, a la Siphon Filter, Splinter Cell, Metal Gear Solid sort of dealy. And then the hacker is actually really cool because it is a 2D, you get a bunch of different windows and you are literally looking at like a hacker's screen and these different windows, and he can, and they do this elegant dance of the hacker opens up some doors or shuts off cameras, and on the other side the spy is, you know, taking out guards and infiltrating buildings. And it's really cool. They're doing something really special here, especially with the hacker side of things, because we haven't really seen gameplay of that. So if you, I did a playthrough with one of the community managers there, Alex, and we did about, I think each playthrough took about 25 minutes to 30 minutes. If you watch one, make sure you watch the hacking one, because it's really neat. Just going through the different menus and systems and stuff. And this was, they've been working on this for over a year, and they're really excited to release it in, he said Q1, so looking forward to do that. The mission type we played was a smash and grab, where you're going into a building with randomized guards and that sort of thing, and grabbing some intel, getting out, and because they're waiting, it's on early access, and they're waiting to have the campaign until sort of almost right before release, because they kind of want to save that part of it. But go check it out. It's a really neat thing. Watch the video preview. Gives you a very good idea of kind of the style of game it is. And it's really fun because they nailed that 90s aesthetic. Like, there's some really cool things in terms of like technologies and on the hacking side of things with like brute forcing passwords and things like that. So if you guys ever played Uplink, that's what it feels like to be the hacker, which is really cool. So
sweet.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. The video, I watched your videos and it looked really,
yeah,
neat.
It's really cool. And there aren't a ton of games like this where you have the asymmetrical thing going on. Well, there is asymmetrical co-op, but not to this degree. Whereas like total two and different ends of the spectrum. So, and you basically have to work together to succeed. You can't just kind of cooperate. You actually have to like work together really hard. So, otherwise you'll fail the mission. So, the last thing I'll say about it is they are doing something that I really like for stealth games. And I might be in the minority, I don't know, but you have a stealth footprint. And what that means is if you are shooting dudes and you miss a shot and you put like a bullet hole in the wall, at the sort of, as the campaign goes on, your stealth footprint climbs, and the sort of enemy that you're going against, the man, that will accumulate over time, which is really neat. So if you're really sloppy at the stealth, the game sort of picks up on that and throws sort of more wrenches at you and curveballs. So I like to explore that system some more when it gets released.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Do we want to take a 50-cent break here and see if it's working?
Let's see what happens here.
Let's find
Yo,
out
Fitty,
here,
hit that ramp.
Let's find out if we can hit that ramp.
Is Locke's system update actually done?
Yeah. It only took like 30 minutes.
Nice.
Alright.
We'll see. This thing's pretty loud. But, so this is because someone passed you a note that the PlayStation servers are offline?
Yeah, we were told that the PS3 servers are on. Oh, I gotta put my profile back in. Hold on.
Did I thousand this? Please tell me I did. That would be amazing. I did! I got 1,000 achievement points in 15 Awesome! Oh, that's so good.
Where's my profile?
I don't know where my profile is. Whatever.
Well, I'm not going to be able to play online without the thing to come in there.
I got my Xbox 360 profile on a stick that I carry around, but my sidekick is going to be Tony Yayo, probably. Not DJ Who Kid, probably Tony Yayo. I don't know. This game is ridiculous.
Please hold. Stick.
How did this not get a sequel?
I know. I think I played through this game at least 4 or 5 times. There we go. It hurts when you have two memory sticks that look exactly the same.
All right, well, turn up.
Remember those avatars, guys?
Oh, yeah.
Those
I see that Turn Up Omar 25 has a game going, and Hank 10106 has one going on too. So
the Xbox, it looks like the Xbox version is working.
Still
then.
Going, still up and running.
That sucks for PS3 owners. I think I have it on PS3 as well. Could verify.
Yeah. I don't have this. I should have this on both systems. What am I even doing with my life?
There needs to be a Steam port of it, too. Like, prompt.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, this was what, THQ, right? So that's part of the reason
Rippin'
why.
Rippin' pepperonis, yeah.
Rippin' pepperonis?
Rippin' pepperonis. THQ, rip.
Mirzalov is mm-hmm. playing. Whatever.
Yo, man, hit that music player.
Hit it.
Join co-op.
Let's see. Does my game pop up, Nick? This is for science. This is really important, you guys.
Join session in progress. Connected.
Nice. We're doing it.
We're putting blood on the sand.
You know what was another game that was underrepresented in this generation? The Club.
Yeah, but isn't blood on the sand basically the Club?
Yeah. All right, here we go. Is this you, Tony Yayo? Please.
Probably.
There he is, Tony Yayo. What up, homie?
So there is actually this interlude is serving dual purpose because it is a transition into our next segment.
Okay, well,
co-op doors, open that door.
Yeah, dude. Here we go. Oh yes!
No, we got boost.
Okay, there we co-opted enough. So we figured awesome. It out. There.
So right, so who yeah. developed that it, game? Remind me.
Swordfish. Swordfish right. Studios.
And, so the reason, besides verifying that the game still works on Xbox...
Which is an important
is
thing.
...is because
yeah.
it's such a good game that our yearly Game of the Year, Co-op Game of the Year awards are named for
the Golden Fitty.
The coveted Golden Fitties. Yeah. And we've got a podcast exclusive here as we talk about our Game of the Year awards.
You're so happy.
I know.
You assholes laugh.
You're so happy. I love it.
Here's something interesting, though, I just noticed looking at this. Every game, our runner-up and second place starts with the D. How weird is that?
That's pretty weird. I'd like to...
D4.
Everyone is a D. A D game that starts with the letter D.
Most of the games on the AAA side start with a D. Except for Far Cry and Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you mean Dark Cry and Assassin's Creed?
Exactly. So how does this work, Nick? What do we do?
Drum roll, do you want to...
Yeah. I'm not saying
start
it.
With, go 3, 2, 1?
I don't
one?
Believe it.
So should we do 3, 2, 1 and reveal the
Why don't we talk about the runner up?
Okay. There's okay. Two runners up, right?
Technically, yeah.
All right, well, aren't we doing
Mark threw a monkey wrench in that when he voted today.
Get that.
I tried, you know, I tried to bribe him.
Yeah, look what your bribing did.
And he's like, "I don't even own that game." So all right, the first one is, well, let's talk Destiny. So surprisingly, Destiny didn't win this, and in fact,
I don't think it's very surprising.
For the amount of time you guys put into it, it certainly
is.
Because
don't bring me into this circle of
he's been up on a mountain.
Well, Mike and Jason combined have put
hundreds,
way more hours into
sure,
that.
Yes.
But there's a difference between a game that I can play that suits me very well, that I can play comfortably and really enjoy it despite its faults, and a game I would call Game of the Year. It's like, you know, Destiny for me, like if I were to actually say, well, if I based Game of the Year on what I spent the most time with and enjoyed the most, yes, I would say Destiny, but my enjoyment of Destiny is flying in the face of many problems that the game has. So objectively, I can't say that this was the game of the year for me. I voted, I slotted it into my top three because I had so much fun with it. But, you know, part of the reason I enjoy playing Destiny so much is because I can just drop in and engage with the combat, which is really good.
Combat is good.
And just kind of let, you know, I can put it controller down, walk away, do something, come back, you know, do some patrols, knock out, you know, something in 10 minutes, and, you know, work on characters or whatever. And I really enjoy that, but that is not the type of activity that everybody enjoys. So I couldn't in good conscience put it number one.
No.
So the game you picked for number one is a game that probably the fewest amount of people enjoy.
But it's an
action.
Well,
you depends.
Completely just contradicted
on
the
you
reason. Why...
At least it's a good game. So,
well, it's interesting because you're right. Actually, Destiny is a game I think most people do enjoy because it got the most amount of votes in terms of the sheer number of people that nominated it. So maybe I should describe how the process worked. Basically, we picked three games, ranked them 1 to 3. The first place vote got 3 points. Second place got 2.
Each staff member ranked them, and then we aggregated the points.
So Destiny actually tied with Dragon Age Inquisition for our runner-up for AAA in the AAA category.
You know what's sad to me is that I think you and I, Nick, were the only people, well, and Mike some too, but on the staff, I think we were the only ones who actually played any of the Assassin's Creed Unity co-op. And
I did, and I didn't like it.
I
didn't like it.
Yeah. I mean, out of the stuff that's on there, I would have liked to have seen that gone higher. I thought that had some really great co-op aspects to it. But
yeah, I mean, maybe I'm skewed in some of this, but I look at it from the co-op perspective more so than just game of the year. Like, for me, Dark Souls 2, which is the one that won this game, maybe overall it's a better game, but the hoops and everything you have to jump through
it's
and
super
the fact
easy.
That you have to do
you just
everything
put on
kind
a
of...
ring, and then it's the best co-op game of the year. It's
we're
super
not
easy.
Watch the 15-minute video.
You're limiting yourself
co-op,
to thinking about...
Super easy.
Like, so the thing about Dark Souls... 2's co-op, or Dark Souls in general, its co-op, is you're supposed, like, it's like a more fleshed out version of what Journey gives you, right? you meet other players seemingly at random, and you can choose to help them or not. And so the game is designed to temporarily receive help from strangers to overcome a set of levels and challenges that are designed to make you feel, you know, despair for no better description. And a nice side effect of mechanics in Dark Souls 2 allows you to more easily play with a specific person, but I would say that the game is a good co-op experience without having some other person on voice chat. And so for the reason I voted it number one is, A, it's the most fun I had in a pure co-op experience. Like, I enjoy playing it solo, but I really enjoy playing it with other people. And it had is about, you know, 40 hours worth of gameplay on its own, and then it added 3 sets of DLC that each, you know, went, you know, gave several hours of its own. And the series just allows for so many different play styles and character builds, and if you're playing with somebody in specific, you can make builds that complement each other really well, so you have fewer weaknesses overall. And it's not for everybody, but it was definitely the game I found most engaging and that I put the most thought into this year. And for my money, if I have to actually think about the game outside of the game and really think about the choices I'm making as far as building my character and things like that, that's not something that we get a lot in a co-op experience. Because, like, you play, you know, for our number 2 game on this list, Dragon Age, you unlock enough levels of your character, you can build that character however the fuck you want, and you can practically solo a lot of the co-op missions.
Right.
So, it to me, while I had a lot of fun playing that, that didn't register on my, you know, end of year list, because it was just a nice diversion. It's like, I enjoyed playing it, and I don't think I'll ever play it again unless they expand it in some kind of meaningful way, because it didn't have a very, like, the character builds aren't particularly flexible. You earn enough points to basically get whatever you want, and you can only ever bring 4 abilities in, so the number of build options is more limited in the multiplayer than it is in the single player for a given character. And the loot system, well, interesting, once you get any single item that makes your character really powerful, the rest of it just goes out the fucking window because you don't need any of it. And then it's all about, you know, like, again, Destiny is about grinding and upgrading gear, but, you know, in Dragon Age, you have to grind to get you have to grind to get currency to randomly hope that you got given the right stuff to build your things, and that's that rewards people who put a lot of time into it, but you can also get random number generated into playing a character you don't want simply because it's the one that you can upgrade the most. So, I guess for me, Dark Souls had it all. It had, for me, compelling multiplayer, compelling character building, a game that was full of content and secrets, and it's just, for me, it was the total package.
Yeah, and
I think Jason nailed it actually earlier in the staff chat. I don't know, Jason, if you want to bring up kind of the point overall, the problem with this year.
There's just not a lot that you get excited about. I mean, like, there's a lot of fun games that have come out this year. There's a lot of games that and from the single player side, actually. I mean, we were talking about earlier, Shadows of Mordor. I mean, like, that's a really great fun game. But overall, there hasn't been a ton this year that I've just been, like, super excited about. The one game that I was most super excited about was Destiny. And when it finally arrived, and I played through the alpha, and I played through the beta, and I was like, okay, so something's going to happen really awesome when the game finally comes out that I haven't seen yet from, and it was the exact same thing. And it's fine. I'm having fun with it. It scratches that MMO itch I've been having for quite a while.
It feels good to shoot things.
Yeah. And you'd like throw a hunting knife and hit a guy in the head and you're just like, yeah, I'm a badass.
But Destiny, the thing about
a great co-op game. It's not like, I mean, it's fun, but it's not a great one. And for me, Dark Souls actually was third on my rank. I put Dragon Age Inquisition because I look more kind of like you do, Nick, with the whole co-op experience and what does everyone contribute to the team. But for me, Destiny, for Dark Souls, I mean, I'm really hesitant about playing with random people. Like, I'm just like, I really don't want to bother. Every single person I play with in Dark Souls helps. It's amazing that, like, everyone there that you summon is there to help you get to the boss and then beat the boss. Like, they get something out of it. And they have no reason to dick around. I went on a strike the other day in Destiny just to, you know, do something, and a guy pushes me off a cliff just because I'm sitting there waiting for the rest of the team. I laughed, but I was just like, well, that doesn't really help anything. I mean, like, you know, what's the point?
Right.
So, I mean, that's, yeah. In a year of so-so stuff, Dark Souls 2 stood out to me as not, like, the best co-op experience, but probably the one that I think overall I can see it winning Game of the Year for co-op because of its mechanics. And
I know the year was kind of down on co-op stuff in general, but Dark Souls 2 would probably still have been tops on my list unless something truly revolutionary came along.
Destiny lived up to its potential. It was supposed to be truly revolutionary, and I think Destiny is fun. It's fun shooting people, but I mean everything around it is lackluster and boring because when you have to, and I know they've patched it and changed the way you get resources and stuff like that, but I mean I don't want to sit around with friends and just like sit on our stupid speeder bikes going and collecting dust or like doing the same 5 patrol missions over and over again. Like that's where it falls short for me, and that's why, you know, if I only judge Destiny for the first time I played any of those missions, I'd be like, yeah, for sure, that was awesome. But for the sum of its parts, that's where I can't get behind Destiny, and that's where a game like Dark Souls, where it's every time you play, it can be different. Every time you play, it's going to be different depending on who you play with and how you build your character, and it doesn't get boring. Like, I mean,
what weapon you're holding. Yeah, you know, it's like there's infinite numbers of ways that game can make itself unique. And for Destiny, I think a lot of, like, most of my enjoyment is because the raid in Destiny, both of them, and even with how exploitable they are currently, the raids in Destiny is the best co-op experience I've had all year. I'd thought about it for a long time, and, like, Far Cry 4 was probably the one I had the most pure fun with. Mm-hmm. Just like, it's like, riding on Babar, you know, fucking shit up. This is amazing. And that's really fun, but in the end, it's still just kind of a, you know, it's another one of those games. And Destiny's Raid is a type of gameplay that has not existed in the shooter space before. That is something really new, and they, you know, with Vault of Glass, that was an amazing raid. You know, Crota's End is not quite as good, I don't think, but they're both still really fun.
The one time I sat in with you guys for that Vault of Glass, that was unreal. It was so good. That was, like, probably best co-op moment of the year.
But it flies in the face of the rest of the game, where teamwork is, you know, everybody's working together by default, but nobody's really working together.
Right.
Unless you're brought in specifically for a strike, and right now if you do a strike playlist, chances are you're going to have one person that just AFKs at the beginning of it and lets the other two people complete the strike so they get the credit but they don't have to do it, which is stupid because, you know, they're like, this is the quickest way to get them. Yeah, and it goes a lot quicker if all three people are doing it.
Right.
But, you know, there's a bounty that exists that rewards you if you don't die in a strike, and if you AFK at the beginning, you'll never die. So, you know, you get a lot of people that are doing that. But that one component of Destiny is really great, but it has a high barrier of entry. You know, because you can get into the raid at level 24, but realistically, you have to be level 27. And then you can take on the hard mode of the raid, which is even cooler, because it really weeds out the idiots who don't know how to play and are just there to, you know, get strung along.
Right, right.
Because normal mode is a lot easier, and you can revive people, and it's more forgiving of mistakes, but hard mode... You know, if you die, you can't be revived until everybody wipes or they beat it. So it makes, when it's not bugging out, because that's a different subject, it makes everything a lot more intense, and you really have to work as a team to beat that stuff. And it's really cool. But again, that is a tiny component of the large game that is Destiny, and the number of people that have actually done and completed the raid without glitching it or otherwise doing an exploit is fairly small. So it's really high on my list, and it was enough to jump it onto my list, my top three, because I wasn't... If I hadn't raided, I wouldn't put Destiny in the top three. The rest of it just doesn't hold up as well. So, yeah.
So, if I can add a transition to this, as a whole, like I said earlier, things have been kind of blah, and I feel like that on the AAA front, because at this point, I feel like we're saturated with AAA stuff. We know what's coming, and we've had chances to play a lot of it. On the indie side, though, there was so many more indie games that I would have wanted to put on here, and there were so many games I was just like, oh, wait, that's Divinity Original Sin, actually. I was like, oh, wait, that's not AAA, that's indie.
Yeah.
So, from the indie front, if we want to announce the game of the year, I was much more excited about this. I thought there was a whole lot of great games out there for people to try.
Yeah.
Where'd Locke go?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
to the bathroom. Maybe.
Did someone summon him?
Maybe he got summoned.
He got summoned. He's a phantom. So, Nick, who's our indie game of the year winner?
I think it's actually kind of funny because the game wasn't on anybody's radar until like 3 weeks left in the
year.
Well,
that was what Risk of Rain was the year before. It was like that came out right at the end of the year, and we all just dropped everything and played nothing but it for a while.
But yeah, so we've been talking a lot about it, but we gave it to Dungeon of the Endless. A lot of folks on the staff picked it up or gave it another shot here at the end of the year. Again, it's been out or in early access for quite some time, but it was finally released. I think I saw it was like October of this year. It is really good. And we've talked a lot about it. There's not much more I think we need to say in terms of what it does. But Jason's right. There was a lot of games that were nominated on the indie side, a lot more than we saw from AAA. We had titles like Tiny Brains, Mercenary Kings, How to Survive, Chariot, Gauntlet, Abyss Odyssey, Never Alone. And then the runner-up was actually Divinity Original
Which
Sin.
I'm actually almost surprised didn't win because of how high we were on that when it came out.
Yeah, I mean, it was real close. I mean, it was 1 point difference.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, Jason, I don't know if I think you probably play the most of that game out of all of us.
And what beat it out? So, again, kind of my whole experience with things of co-op is what everyone does. And Divinity Original Sin is a great RPG for like fans of RPGs, and it's a great co-op experience for two people who really just want to get into that world and spend the time doing it. It is not a great experience if you want to just grab a group of friends and, hey, let's just go play this real quick. I mean, like, it doesn't have that feeling to it.
When that happens, someone steals all the paintings in the town. And
I know, right?
Kills NPCs that you're trying to talk to.
They attack the guards and kill the mayor. And I mean, like, it's definitely a co-op experience for people who are used to playing very traditional kind of stuff. And the developers themselves even kind of acknowledge that. Dungeon of the Endless, though, is the perfect game for you grab a group of friends and let's go do this. Let's see if we can beat this. There's like, you feel challenged by it, and you feel like every person contributes something. I thought your board game analogy actually was a great one, Nick, for that game, because the more I thought about it, the more it does remind me of a lot of board games that, you know, Fantasy Flight and others have put out, where it is you have to plan each move, and we open this door, and what's each person going to do? Where are they going to stand? Who's going to contribute what to this? And it's scratched that Risk of Rain itch. Like, I've been wanting to play a game like Risk of Rain. I played more Risk of Rain over the summer when they expanded it, and Dungeon of the Endless was my Risk of Rain for this year. I was like, this is exactly what I wanted. Another roguelike that challenges you. You have characters to unlock. You have, you know, friends that you can hop in there with, and you have no guarantee that, I mean, you can just roll bad rooms.
Yep.
Like, yeah. I mean, so I'm happy with that. I will say real quickly, though, if you have PSN and a PS4, or I think that's coming soon to Xbox One, Chariot is a great two-player local co-op game. It's one of the most fun co-op games I've had local experience this year. Just playing with my wife, who we the first met, she's not great at playing games, but we had a ball playing that. So, even though it didn't win, cool. I'm plugging that.
Also, Never Alone gets my plug.
So 2015, I guess there's going to be another little game on Steam.
Oh yeah!
We'll have to rebrand it so it qualifies for the Game of the Year awards, you know, Steam That's edition. Right. But it better be on everyone's nomination list. Come that end of it.
Full disclosure: we developed this game.
It's about ethics. It's about ethics.
All right. Well, let's wrap things up, and. Let's do a little show and tell. Let's see some Christmas presents.
I got some show and tell. See. I got a book. Oh. It is Hardcore Gaming 101's Castlevania compendium. It's 150 pages of write-ups and reviews of every game in the Castlevania series, and it's pretty great.
Cool.
I had a lot of fun with that.
So not exactly video game related, but was pretty cool. My sister and brother-in-law got me this, which is the local theater where they are in Birmingham, Alabama. There's an artist there who basically does movie posters when they show classic movies there. So this is, and they're like limited runs and stuff. So they got me one of the posters for Star Trek II: Wrath of Khan that the guy did that I thought that is really pretty cool.
That's cool. Yeah.
I like it.
So, that's my little show and tell.
Lock, what do you got?
To go along with my lumber sexual motif, I got a nice new hatchet that can be attached to my belt, and it's pretty awesome. It's got some nice weight to it. It's nice and sharp, and I can shave with it if I need to. So, yeah,
I like the notch in it there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So I didn't get much for Christmas, but I just got this today.
Yeah!
Quadricopter.
And it's actually got a 720p camera on it.
That's
so
cool!
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you see how small it is. So I turned it on. I tried to fly it around my house. I promptly crashed into my face and said, well, we'll wait till it's a little warmer outside. Give that a go.
Nice.
So that was my Christmas to myself. All right. That is our first episode of 2015. Woo! Look forward to this year. I mentioned it to, I think, you, Locke, and Slack.
Oh, yeah, well, I'll get the
take
preview
a look at
video
the calendar
up.
And we'll get a preview video of what's coming this year. So hopefully it's a good year for co-op games. I honestly, I think there's a couple big ones early in the year. We talked like Evolve, and there's that Resident Evil game.
I'll mention it next podcast, but Dying Light's really fun.
Dying Light, yeah. So, hopefully there won't be a Dark Souls sequel.
Bloodborne comes out in April.
Yeah, but it's not co-op, so we won't have to worry.
Well, never know.
There's no co-op.
Well,
you can't. All right, so leave us a voicemail, 646-926-6748. You can leave us feedback on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter. We are Co-Optimist Without the Dash. We're on Google+, the Facebooks, all of the social medias. You can find us. Just search for Co-Optimist. I'm Nick. I'm joined by Locke and Mike and Jason.
Bye, guys. Have a good one.